Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Wednesday, April the 3rd, day number 93 of 2013, and tonight we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, and that's public education. We're going to be catching up with our good friend Duke Machado, who's going to be checking in on the topic of public education. You know, I feel very strongly that there are some reforms needed, and I think tonight when we talk to Duke, I think you'll hear a very interesting perspective from a fellow Hispanic about what's happening in public education, at least here in Texas, with so many Hispanic kids in public education. You know, I don't think their parents are getting their money's worth. I mean, that's just my philosophy, so we'll get into that with Duke later on. Just a quick update on our book, Cubanos in Wisconsin. The book is now available in Kindle and print. You can order either one. And, you know, my son, as I mentioned a couple of other times, my son put together this great website where you can go in and not only order the book, we hope you do that, of course, but you can also go in and you can see all the reviews that have been printed about the book, and there are quite a few already. And you can also hear some of the audio interviews that we've done with radio stations like the John Batchelor Show across the country, like WISN up in Milwaukee, like Catholic Radio. We've had a lot of different ones, and you can hear them all right there on the website. So it's just a great place to go. You can check these things out, and, of course, we hope that you buy the book as well, Cubanos in Wisconsin. I'm going to be changing gears for a second. I'm going to be publishing an article that will appear tomorrow on the American Thinker, and the article is about Obamacare and the amazing thing that is happening with Obamacare. The reality is that the best thing that we conservatives have going for us is the fact that Obamacare is being implemented. Who would have thought this a couple of years ago? Who would have thought this on Election Day when we're all so depressed with the election results? It looks like the best way to repeal Obamacare is to actually implement it. And as you will see in the article, I note some of the facts that you now have Senate Democrats voting against the medical device tax. And I think you're going to see more and more Democrats really walk away from Obamacare as they begin to get complaints and as voters start calling in saying that their premiums are going up or their employers are cutting back their hours as a result of Obamacare. So who would have believed this back on Election Day that Obamacare is going to be repealed? Not by us, but by the fact that it's being implemented. It's a great irony, isn't it, what's happening with Obamacare. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Duke Machado right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and just a quick reminder that on this day in history, President Truman signed or created the Marshall Plan, one of the great accomplishments of the 20th century on this day in 1948. Let's say hello to Duke Machado. How are you, Duke?
Oh, I'm awesome, Silvio. Always good to visit with you and your show. You have so many good reviews. Everyone talks about your program, and I just commend you for doing it, for taking the time and putting it together. It really does make a difference.
Thank you very much. You know, we're hoping, you know, the way I look at it, this is like a baseball team. Everybody's got to do whatever they can do, because at the end of the day, you know, the more we do, the more we can influence minds. Just quickly, Duke, give us a little bio. I know we had you on the show before, but just give us a little biography.
Well, I am the founder and director of GOP Is For Me. We are an auxiliary of the Republican Party of Texas. We focus primarily on Hispanic issues like immigration, border security. Of course, education is huge, but our focus is to grow the party through Hispanic inclusion. But truly, as we go around and visit with people, we realize that it's not just Hispanics that we're in contact with, but just people in need. You know, there's people who need information, people who aren't aware of all of the bills and laws that are being passed that could negatively impact them. And it's just some sort of it's like an enlightenment era is kind of how I like to look at it. But basically very active in Texas politics and very interested in education and you know, other issues. As people know, I'm sure people who listen to your program know the population trends in Texas. You know, we have a lot of decisions to make.
That's right. No, yeah, the population, we are slowly but surely becoming a very, it'll soon be a Hispanic state, the way
right.
the trends are going. Let me, before we get to public education, I just wanted to get your quick reaction. I just had a little editorial there before you came on about Obamacare and how something is happening. I don't know what you felt like on election night, but I felt very depressed on election night because I thought we had lost Obamacare. But now it looks more and more like the implementation of Obamacare is turning into such a nightmare and such a, you know, such a problem that many Democrats have already walked away with it, from it. The medical device tax is a good example of that. But I think there will be more. I'm just curious what your reaction is.
Oh, I totally agree, and I think the former Speaker Nancy Pelosi said it best when she talked about needing to pass the bill before they could learn what was in the bill. You know, that's what they're doing. They're learning the intricacies, the things that we conservatives were talking about that they were calling scare tactics. Is truly reality unfolding, and I believe that there will be more resistance to the Obamacare, and I would like to see, you know, from the, you know, there's lots of different, there's still a few people hoping that the whole thing can be abolished because you know, technically it may not have been presented properly. It should have come from the House and not the Senate, or, you know, there's lots of different things, battles that are taking place, but the one battle to me is when the people realize that it's not free, that's going to be what unravels everything.
Right.
When they realize that,
yeah.
Yeah, this isn't free insurance.
That's right.
and it's mandatory, by the way. And if you don't pay it, you're going to get fined. And if you don't pay your fine, you can go to jail.
Right.
You know, we were talking about these things 2 years ago, but nobody was listening.
That's
now
right.
What?
And the other thing, too, not only is it mandatory, not only are they going to put you in jail, but it's worse than what you had before. and that's,
right.
that's the other
right.
problem. You know, if Obamacare had, let's say, in fact, reduced premiums, improved quality, then, you know, some people like me would have said, okay, fine, you know, let's go with it. But it's turning into a nightmare, and we just had a situation in the Senate Democrats, or the Senate, on a 79, I think, to 21 vote, which means something like 30 Democrats voted for it, turned down the medical device tax. And the problem is, if you take away the funding mechanism of Obamacare, you know, it's like an automobile without gasoline; it doesn't run.
Right, it's just going to sit there. Right,
it's just going to sit there. And,
yeah.
No, it's just going to sit there and not be implemented. Which, of course, I don't know. I have a funny feeling that the whole thing is just going to fall apart next year when they really get into it. But something else, and I want to get into public education with you, because I think this is a real challenge in the Hispanic community. And I was hoping that Mitt Romney would focus more on public education. They obviously, their calculation didn't work when it came to the election. But to me, this is really a shame what's happening with public education. And Hispanics, I think children in general, but Hispanics, obviously of interest to you and me. I think it's horrible what we're doing to our kids in public education. Am I overstating it, you think?
No, I don't think you're overstating, but one thing that you might say is it, to add to that, is not all public schools are failing schools, and we have to have a distinction between when we just call it public education. Really, what we're saying is we're against failing public education. And because there are, you know, I happen to live in a great school district. My little girl has excellent teachers, excellent facilities, the right mindset. The education system is geared towards, you know, advancement. And, you know, they've got the right idea. In public schools like that, they need to be allowed to continue doing what they're doing. They've got the right formula. But where we have a problem is when you end up and you happen to live in a neighborhood where your public school is a failing public school. What are your options as a parent, as an individual resident, a Texas resident? What can you do if your student is locked into a school that has failed for several years consecutively? Well, you know, in Texas, the current law says that school has to fail for 6 consecutive years before the parents can do anything about the altering the course of that school. Now, that's 6 consecutive years. Let's say they fail for 3 years, then they pass for 1, and then they fail for 4 more years and pass for 1. You're never going to have the opportunity to turn that leadership around in that school. And there's nothing more frustrating to parents than being handcuffed and kept from taking control of the situation and their child's education. And that's frustrating.
Right. No, you're exactly right about that. And I should make a correction. I should correct myself. You're exactly right. We're talking about failing public schools, and not all of them are failing. I like you, I had the great fortune of sending our sons to a very good district, and they got a good education and a very fine public school with a great principal and teachers. So you're exactly right. I want to make sure that I correct myself. I didn't mean that all public schools were bad.
Well,
unfortunately,
I don't know, you did.
Many of them are, though. And my concern, Duke, is that I think you and I, for whatever reason, we were lucky to put our kids in a district where they could get maybe a better school. But I'm concerned about many of the inner cities where the Hispanic kids are and obviously the black kids as well, but we're talking about Hispanics being the growing population, mm-hmm. where many of these Hispanic kids are in schools and in neighborhoods where the only option they have is a failing school. That's, I think, the crux of the problem, right?
Yes, no, you're absolutely right. And those schools but let's back up for a second. You said that somehow we were able to get our kids to go to good public schools. You know, why is that? Why in my school district, it is because of the neighborhood I live in. It's because you know, the average price of the average price of the homes in my district are $160,000. So they get tax dollars. They get revenue from property taxes. They get money per student. And these schools are full because industry moves into this district because of our great schools, because parents want their kids to go to good schools. So when you invest in public schools and public schools succeed, that is a win-win for industry, for families, for, you know, for the kids, obviously, and for the entire community. But we had to work. We had to make the decisions to move into a neighborhood that was in that district. You know, not everyone has that ability.
Right.
So what do those guys do? Well, that's why we're here to talk tonight, I think. And there's in Texas, there's 3 bills that are being presented that when you combine the language in these 3 separate bills together, it gives power to the parents like they've never had before. We're talking about unleashing charter schools. We're talking about reducing the time from 6 years consecutive failing to 2 years, and then allowing parents to petition the school to make changes in their leadership in that school. To the third bill, which I'll read off all the bills, but the third bill kind of pulls them all together and says, hey, we're going to create an all new district, and any school that is not in the passing capacity will be assigned to this new district, and this new district has the ability to come to your school, reorganize it, restructure it, put in some new leadership, maybe put in some new policies, and turn that school around.
Right. Now, those are very good ideas, and I guess, you know, I've always felt that every kid in the state of Texas, you know, whether he's the son of a millionaire or a son of a low-income worker, should have access to a good education, because at the end, all of us benefit in investing in kids, because, you know, you never know which one of these kids is going to turn around and be a great businessman or start an idea or whatever. So we want all of our kids to get access to a good education. Unfortunately, like you were saying, it doesn't happen that way. And I just think that I would go even further in a reform than the three bills that you're suggesting tonight. I mean, I would go to the distance, and I would simply say we're going to give each parent a voucher equal to whatever it's costing us right now to educate a child, and we're going to let that parent with that voucher shop around a school. So all of a sudden, the public schools would actually have to go out, go after the parents in much the same way you do in business, where you advertise for customers. And I think that right there would have a very profound effect on the quality of education, because not all the public schools are bad, as you indicated, but the ones that are bad would go out of business because the parents would take the kids out. So I think maybe a little competition, a little bit of the competition that you and I have to deal with in our businesses every day. Yeah, you know, you're in the business you're in, it's very competitive, but it makes you better, because you have to stay on top of your game every single day to compete with other businesses in town. That's what I like to see, more competition, and let the parents drive the competition by choosing the school that they can send their kids to, whether it's a religious school or a public school or a non-religious, whatever the school is. We're going to give the power to the parents. That's, you know, that's the kind of reform that I would like to see. Maybe that's a little too far, but
it's not too far at all, Silvio. And what I would tell you is the language in these bills, it is not phrased in the language of voucher. But what it clearly states is that if a school is deemed to be a failing school, and this school at this point can become a charter school, or the students in that school will have the option to take those same dollars that the state gives that student to go to that public school, they can take those dollars and apply them to a separate charter school. And now charter schools are all different, you know. They've got their own focus. Some of them are focused on technology, or some are focused more on the arts. But the parents have the choice as to where they want to send their students. They're no longer locked, and they're not going to have to pay for that, because these bills allow the state funding to transfer with the student.
Well, that's really the key, you know, giving the power to the parents. But I do want to say one thing, so that my comments about public education are not misunderstood. I think 99% of the teachers that I've ever come into contact with are absolutely great. I think they're very dedicated, and they are absolutely wonderful teachers. I think a lot of the principals that I've met are wonderful professionals as well. The problem is, Duke, it's not so much the teachers or the principal, as what I would like to do is blow up the monopoly of public education. So that public education, any monopoly is bad. It doesn't matter whether it's public education or healthcare. Monopolies are bad. And that's what I want to do eventually, is blow up the monopoly so that kids are able to get an education. And if you're not getting it in the school down the street, then we're going to give you the option of getting it in the school on the other side of the street. But you as a parent will have the power to make that decision, because we want, as a state, I think you would agree with me on this, Duke, we need educated kids. You know, we don't need a state where 30% of the Hispanic kids are dropping out. That doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do me any good. When kids are dropping out, we're literally wasting lives. And we've wasted all this money we've spent in the 9 or 10 grades that they went to school, because we're not getting our money back. So the whole thing right now, I just think, demands reform. And I just hope that the legislators will step up to the plate, because this is a problem that really demands reform.
Well, this, I can tell you that the structure of these bills, and I want to read them off to you. The first one is Senate Bill 2, and it is presented by a Republican, Dan Patrick, okay? Senate Bill 1263, or I'm sorry, Senate Bill 2 is kind of called the charter schools. It's authorizing more charter schools and laying the foundation for that. And then you have the SB 1263, which is the bill that reduces from 6 years to 2 years for failing schools. And then you have, and that is by Senator Taylor. He's a Republican as well. And this, the third bill, is actually authored by Royce West, a Democrat. But this is something that is unique and interesting, in that people in, you're talking about the urban areas, like the Dallas, the metro areas, where they see their dropout rates just through the roof, even beyond the average state dropout rates. No one is more frustrated than they are at the schools, at the public schools' inability to help these students pass. And so, if this is truly I would call it a bipartisan approach. The language is harsh, which basically says if you're failing, we're going to have to step in, and we're going to have a team of people assess your school. And if we find out that it's the principal, your principal's gone. If we find out that it's the teachers are going to be replaced. If it's the policy, they're going to adjust the policy. So these committees that oversee these in these new districts are going to have a lot more authority. And you're talking about breaking up that monopoly. This fractures the monopoly. But I will say this, once a school has been recovered and brought back to a passing status, and that has continued for a few years, then it can return it back to the public school system. But the public school system, what we call the traditional public school system, must adhere to the policies and procedures that have been put in place.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, go ahead and finish.
Well, no, I'm just saying there's a lot of thought put into these three bills, and if all three of them pass, it is going to change the education system in Texas. It will unleash the power of like you say, the capitalist approach, where parents pick the best schools.
Right.
And, you know, and that is truly what we want. We want those choices as parents.
Right. And I think the other thing, what makes me happy about the bills that you read, is that there does seem to be a bipartisan consensus brewing here in Texas, and hopefully it goes out to the rest of the country. And the bipartisan consensus is that the schools are not failing, and they're not just failing Hispanic kids. I mean, in the black districts, the schools are not doing well either. And I think it's time that we address it, and I'm happy to see that somebody like Roy West is a part of this, because you need that bipartisanship I think that gives it a lot more legitimacy when it is bipartisan. I do want to say one thing, though, because I've always felt that whenever we've had a, not you and I, but whenever I've discussed public education with others, that, you know, we beat up the school districts a lot, and they need to be beaten up. I'm not making excuses for them. But there is something, too, that there's nothing the schools can do about this or the politicians can do about this, but there's something else that I believe is a problem, and that is the breakdown of the family. Because the number of teachers that I've spoken to who tell me that they have to deal with kids, you know, going to school from broken homes, kids without discipline, I think that also has an impact. Now, I know there's nothing that government can do directly about that. You cannot pass a bill to fix that problem. But I do think that's also a part of the problem when it comes to education today, and that is that there's a lot of parents who, for whatever reason, don't care or are simply not doing what maybe my parents did or your parents did to make sure that we understood that education was important. You know, when I was growing up, my parents made it very clear that graduating from high school or dropping out was not an option. That's, you know, don't even think about that because you're not going to do it. You're going to graduate because you have to graduate, because if you don't graduate, you're going to go downhill. I mean, they sort of made it very clear to us, and they put the value.
Well, they made it. Yeah, they made it so that you would be ashamed to drop out.
That's right. But they also made it very clear that there was an economic detriment to dropping out. That, you know, the dropping out would mean that I wouldn't be able to go to college, or I wouldn't be able to have a good job, and I would. You know, they made it very clear. I guess they presented the options to me in a very clear way, and they presented it in such a way, Duke, that I, you know, I would have never thought about dropping out. But so I just bring that point about the family in, because I think sometimes we criticize the teachers, and they need to be criticized sometimes, the principals, the districts, all of that is fair. But there is that element of the family, which is, I also think, a major problem in public education today, Duke.
Well, I agree, and I think, you know, most families are now dual-income families. They're hurrying home. They're picking up kids from one thing and taking them to another, and getting home just in time to scarf down some dinner and jump in the shower real quick and go to sleep. But hopefully mom and dad stay up help you get ready for the morning, you know, but if not, then you got to get up and you got to get ready and get your breakfast. When do you do your homework? You know, when parents have to set priorities, and, you know, when more parents are, you know, younger, single parents, struggling, trying to make ends meet, you know, they're trying to put food on the table. They're not, they're just going to leave their children's education up to the schools. And you do find that, you know, go to a function at school where parents are invited, you will see maybe 10% participation. They're not. Whether it's because they're not even interested, or whether they don't think that there is any significance or importance for them to do it. But a lot of parents, I agree, they're just sitting there, allowing their kids, they're not enforcing any sort of education traditions, as in you get home, you do your homework, you're not going to turn the TV on until you finish your homework.
Right.
You're going to read this, you're going to do that every day. And, you know, the schools can only do so much.
Right. No, you're exactly right. And I brought this up because just a few years ago, I was doing some teaching, you know, English as a second language, and I was doing some work in the evening, so I go to different campuses to teach a class, and I was using the room of a second grade teacher, and I started talking with this lady, and we were talking about, and she was sharing with me some of the problems that she was having, just trying to get parents interested, and how difficult it was, you know, how frustrating it was to be teaching a class where maybe half of the kids had parents who were not interested, or in her case in particular, many of the parents she couldn't even communicate with because of the language. So, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it's a complicated topic, and reforming education is a big part of it. I agree with you on that, but I also think there is a family problem, and I just wanted to bring that up just to I think cover the issue as completely as we could. Well, we're kind of running out of time, but I wanted to ask you, where do we go from here? What do you see as the next step in this process?
Well, you know, within the next few weeks, these votes are going to be coming through. Anyone who can contact their local representative and talk to them about these three bills, or talk to them about their support for charter schools and support for, you know, giving parents more control over their schools, you know, that is the number one most important thing they can do. They can contact me. They can visit our website. GOP is for me. If people want to write or blog or discuss more about these issues, we're more than happy to continue the conversation. And that's really what we need to do. We just need to keep pushing.
That's it. We just got to get more and more parents talking about this. And eventually, as we have the numbers, a lot of these things will begin to happen. But we got to get, as you indicated, we got to get a lot of parents on our side. I have a link to your website on the show information. And
awesome.
So that'll allow some of the listeners to go to it. But I really want to congratulate you, Duke, for taking this initiative and talking about it, because we have to save public education. I mean, we have to save education. I don't think there's an option here. If we don't save public education, we're going to have a very difficult future in 25 or 30 years, because when these kids get to, I mean, I was talking about this with some parents this evening. They've got three little kids, 9, 7, and 5. And I was saying to them how important it is, and these are good parents. They're really committed to their kids' education. But I was just thinking, if your 9-year-old kid doesn't graduate from school, what options is he going to have in 9 years? Not many, because there aren't that many jobs anymore that you can get without a high school education.
No, you're right. You're right. And if I could, I want to add one thing, if I have just one second.
Yeah, go ahead.
To the teachers and administrators or people in the public school system, if a teacher teaches in one of these charter schools or in this new district that's being proposed, it's called the Achievement School District, and that's the district that takes over the failing school and brings it back. So if a teacher works in the new district or works for a charter school, all of their teacher benefits stay with them. It is as if they are continuing their employment with their traditional school district. And, they're not going to lose benefits, and, I'm sure there will be a lot of scare tactics, but, their pay is going to stay the same. Nothing is changing. All of their whatever they receive for their education benefits, they keep.
Good.
And so I just wanted to make sure that was
also. Yeah, because you're exactly right. The scare tactics will be that, they're going to lose their careers and they're going to lose their jobs and all these scare tactics that always come from the left. But, I don't know whether you've had this experience, Duke, but I've spoken to a lot of teachers, and there's a great deal of frustration in the teaching profession because, as I said before, most of these, 99% of these people are very dedicated. They went into teaching because they wanted to make a difference in kids' lives. And I just think the system is making them frustrated. It's not
the kids.
It's the system. We just have a system that needs to be reformed. And once we do, I think a lot of these great teachers will be a lot happier doing their job.
Well, and the teachers will be empowered. There'll be leadership with true discipline. A lot of schools, you might go immediately to dress code, certain sorts of uniforms, or, the first thing that any school must do is get control of the student body. If the students are running the school, it's not a school. I believe under the charter schools or under these achievement school districts, their goal is going to be to bring in leadership that can handle disciplinary issues, that can handle working with students whose parents aren't interested, who can handle working with students who are you know, living in economically challenged regions or districts,
right.
You know. So
right, you're exactly right.
There is a way around it. We just have to unify around these particular sorts of bills and just keep pushing.
Right, and we, as you indicated a few minutes ago, we just got to get more and more parents on our side, and we do that by explaining to them how we're going to give them more power under this system. They'll get to have a lot more control of their kids' education. And I've got to believe that most parents want the best for their kids, and they will support us. But I talk to teachers, Duke, and the frustration is very high. Unfortunately, a lot of them are even dropping out of teaching, and a lot of it is this terrible system that we've put them in, and we've got to save not only the kids, but we've got to save the teachers, because after all, we're going to need them.
You've got to have great teachers, and unfortunately, you know, let me give you an example. The average student probably, the income that a school receives per student is in the range between $6,000 and $8,000 average. And if you ask, you know, in Waco, for example, there's a private school that is half that price. And these students are three times as sharp. They're just advanced. You know, their standards are higher, but it's a private school. And, you know, whether charter schools begin to fill that void and begin to take on that sort of challenge and bringing in these sorts of teachers who are more comfortable in a different environment with different with different freedoms to maybe teach in ways that are more productive for the students. There still has to be regulations. There's still going to be testing. You still have to be able to measure these new schools. But I just have to believe, after reading these bills, and I would encourage everyone to read them, that they're going to give the schools every opportunity to rectify their situations. And if they don't, then our kids cannot be allowed to stay in failing schools. That's the bottom line.
No, you're exactly right. And I think you and I, and I think most people agree with you on that. You know, these failing schools are not... they're not helping anybody. They're not helping the kids. They're not helping the parents. They're not helping you and I. And we don't even live in those districts, because those school districts are turning out kids who are not prepared for the world that we live in today. We live in an entirely different world, and it's even going to get more technological 5-10 years from now. And if we're not graduating kids who can compete in that world, then we're not. Our future is not going to be very bright. But Duke, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight. And,
hey, it was my pleasure.
And we've got to do this again. When there's an update on some of these bills or any new information, let me know, and we'll just do another segment on it, because I'm fascinated with public education. I'm fascinated with the topic, because I think all of us have to. I mean, it's also, and if I could just say one last thing, it's also a great, I mean, just looking at it politically, if I could for a second, it is a way, I believe, of connecting with many Hispanic parents also, of bringing Hispanic parents to the GOP and the conservative movement closer, because I have to believe most of them are not happy with what's happening in school. So it's a great opportunity in so many ways, I think, for people like you and I, Duke.
Mm-hmm. No, you're correct, and I appreciate you giving me the venue to chat and to discuss it further. And you know, if anyone's interested, you know, read the bills, call your representatives and senators, and you know, let them know you want something like this, or that you would stand behind it.
That's right. I appreciate you, Sylvia. No, my pleasure.
Again,
one more time. Why don't you give us the name of the website one more time?
Okay. Yes, that's GOPisForMe.com.
GOPisForMe.com. And we have a link on the show information. But, Duke, thank you so much. Keep up the great work. And stay in touch. I like to do a follow-up sometime in the future.
Yes, will do. You take care.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Good night, Duke.
Good night.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back for some closing commentaries. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. What a great great topic, public education, and what a great guy, Duke Machado, down in Central Texas. He's doing a great job, and we have got to get the word out. I mean, this public education issue is more than just a political campaign or whatever. We're talking here about the lives of our kids, and unfortunately, some of these failing schools are not serving our kids. And if something is failing, you got to cut it. You got to stop it. I mean, whether it's a business, whether it's a personal problem, you got to deal with it. And these bills that Duke is talking about will try to deal with some of these problems. It may not be a magic bullet, but at least we're headed in the direction of filling out the problem. So we put a link to Duke Machado's website on the show information. If you would like to follow up on that, just give Duke click to his website and follow up directly with Duke. But as Duke was saying, the way we get involved here is by calling your representatives and by letting the school know that you're not happy. I mean, let the principals, let the districts know, let the school boards know that you're not happy with what's happening. Parents have got to get involved. Parents have a lot more power than they realize. They've got to get involved. They are the ultimate power here. We just got to get them involved. And unfortunately, too many parents are sleeping through this whole process, and that has to stop. The parents have to get involved. Just a quick update. We're going to be talking with Clayton Kramer tomorrow, and we're going to be talking about the Second Amendment and all of this debate about gun control. There's been a lot of talk about gun control, and I think President Obama is really politicizing the issue, not a political issue. There's a lot of problems with violence and all of that, but gun control is not necessarily the solution. There's a lot of other problems here that we can deal with, like mental health and maybe finding a better way of keeping track of these criminals. You know, let's enforce some of the laws that we have. But anyway, we're going to get into all of that tomorrow night with Clayton Kramer. He's a man who's written a great deal about the Second Amendment. He's a history professor, understands the Second Amendment, why we have a Second Amendment, and why we should keep it. And he understands that as well as anybody. So we're going to get into that tomorrow night. No, just a couple of other things here from On This Day in History before we go. I found these to be rather interesting. As I mentioned, in 1948, President Truman announced the Marshall Plan. The Marshall Plan, of course, became the framework for the rebuilding of Europe. And back in 1948, people forget, back in 1948, that was 3 years after the end of World War II, Europe was basically in ruins. And there were all kinds of threats in Europe, all kinds of problems in Europe, that we would lose the peace, as they used to call it. And we would lose it because there were all kinds of rumors that there'd be communist takeovers in many of these countries because of all of the social problems they were having. And President Truman, one of the great presidents of the 20th century, decided that we had to do something about it, and the Marshall Plan became the solution. And the Marshall Plan contributed to the rebuilding of Europe and in many ways saved the continent of Europe after World War II. So we remember today the Marshall Plan, as I said, one of the great American enterprises of the 20th century, led by one of the great presidents of the 20th century, Mr. Harry Truman, President Truman. 1882, here's another one. In 1882, Jesse James was killed on a day like this. So if you're a fan of Jesse James or you enjoy the movie, this is the day that he was killed in 1882. 1865, the Confederacy capital, that would be Richmond, fell on a day like this. And this is interesting because when I saw this story on this day in history, 1865, you know, April 3rd, 1865, the Confederacy falls. And then I thought about the fact that in 12 days later, President Lincoln was assassinated. So, you know, all of these days, you know, indicating the end of the Civil War, whether it's the fall of the Confederacy, of the different battles that were won at the end, all of these days, of course, get you closer to April 15th when President Lincoln was assassinated back in 1865. And last but not least, on this day in history, 1860, the Pony Express debuted. And, of course, that was the U.S. mail. And they would use the Pony Express to get mail all over the country. You know, there's a lot of talk these days about the U.S. mail and all the money they're losing and all that kind of stuff. But you know, it's not a bad program. I mean, the fact that the government would run the post offices, I mean, it's not a bad program. I just think they need to get updated and live in the world, live in a world today, of course, where people don't send letters that much. They use email and other technological breakthroughs. Just one quick note. I want to go back to the editorial that I wrote that will be published on Thursday at the American Thinker regarding Obamacare. As all of you know, Obamacare was found constitutional a year ago, back in June, by the Supreme Court. And Justice Roberts, through the power to tax provision of the Constitution, said that he thought it was constitutional. Then, of course, we had an election, and we were hoping that the election of Mitt Romney would at least stop Obamacare, but obviously that didn't happen, and many of us thought, well, gee, Obamacare is lost, you know, we're never going to be able to repeal it. Well, something funny is happening, and that is the implementation of Obamacare is turning into such a nightmare that now even Democrats are starting to back down. And I think we saw the first sign of this just in the last couple of days when the Senate Democrats overwhelmingly voted to kill what is known as the medical device tax. And the problem is that if you kill the tax, if you stop Obamacare from taxing, or at least you kill the taxes that come with it, then Obamacare is not going to have the funding. It's going to fall apart on its own. So I think it's very ironic that the way we repeal Obamacare is by implementing it. And I wonder how many of us would have thought that back in November when we were so depressed with the election results. The reality is Obamacare is turning into a nightmare for President Obama. And there was a very interesting column that I saw today, and I don't remember the lady who wrote it, but she said that Obamacare is going to turn into Obama's Iraq War. Remember all the problems that President Bush had with the Iraq War, particularly in the second term. And she thinks that Obamacare is going to turn into his Iraq War. It could be. That could happen. I think it's going to be more like Katrina, frankly, where all kinds of things go wrong and there's nothing you can do because of all the incompetence on the ground. Either way, no matter what analogy you want to use, the fact is that Obamacare is in deep trouble, and it's in deep trouble because we're implementing it, and that's something that I think a lot of Americans are going to be very uncomfortable with when they find out everything that's in this bill and exactly the impact that it's going to have on their daily lives. I think a lot of Americans are going to be very unhappy. You can be sure about that. And if we play our cards correctly, this could be a very significant political issue in 2014. But we have to play our cards correctly. And what I mean by that is we got to nominate people who don't say stupid things about abortion, like in Missouri and Indiana. We got to nominate people who can answer an abortion question without making fools of themselves. And that's something we have to make sure we nominate good candidates, because we have a chance to take the Senate in 2014. We have a very good chance, actually, of taking it. But it's going to require good candidates because, again, the incumbents are going to be pretty tough. So we just need good candidates. One last thought here on North Korea. Look, I'm not a national security expert, but obviously what's happening in North Korea is very dangerous. You know, when you have a country threatening to fire nuclear weapons, you got to take them very, very seriously. I'm not really that concerned about North Korea hitting San Francisco or hitting Honolulu or hitting some of our ships in the Pacific or the Indian Ocean or whatever. What I'm a lot more concerned about, frankly, is the 10 million people who live in Seoul, South Korea, right over the border. Because if there's any kind of military problem on the border, you could have missiles going south or missiles going north. And I think there could be a military battle, and you could have thousands of people in South Korea killed because of the population center right there on the border. And that's the one thing that I am very worried about, and that is the number of people who live on that border, particularly on the south side in Seoul, South Korea, where we have about 10 million people. So that's what I'm really worried about. What's going to happen in the Korean Peninsula, I don't know. But I hope we project strength. I hope we are telling the North, either directly or through diplomatic channels, certainly through China. And by the way, why aren't we doing more with China? Why aren't we calling in the Chinese and saying, hey, you got to cut this guy out? you've got to do something here. I think we should be using our influence with China. Maybe we are, but it doesn't seem on the outside like it's working. But I think we have to make it very clear to this young man up in North Korea and to the people around him that if there's any military problem, what is going to rain on them is going to be so severe, is going to be so devastating that none of them are going to survive. I don't care what hole he goes into, he's not going to survive. And I'm talking about the young man running the country right now. We got to put the fear of missiles hitting wherever they're going to be, and hopefully that will bring these people to their senses. But it's a very, very serious situation in the Korean Peninsula, and I really don't know. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. But whatever happens, I hope we've made it very clear to the North Koreans where we stand and what we can do to defend ourselves. And if they don't know it, well, I hope we're making it very clear to them through diplomatic channels that we will defend ourselves. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. And that's going to do it for tonight, folks. Thank you for listening. Thank you to Duke Machado for joining us tonight and talking about public education. Everybody have a wonderful evening, and we'll talk to you later. I guess I should say congratulations to the Texas Rangers. They beat the Houston Astros today, and they're 2-1, and they're coming home for the home opener on Friday. We'll talk to you later.